with the funeral service at 1 and then the graveside being situated a good distance from here. So I'm going to try to preach a shorter message. We'll leave off the handshake in order to expedite matters. But the time that we have, we want to use well and realize its importance. And I want to speak to you this morning for a few minutes from the 3rd chapter of the book of Galatians, where Paul begins that chapter by saying to the Galatians that I marvel that ye are so soon removed from him that called you to another gospel, though he then explains there's not actually another gospel. You've been moved to a pseudo gospel, a false gospel. And when he says that he marvels, the meaning is he's intrigued and perplexed that they would so quickly leave the gospel of Jesus Christ, the most highly corroborated religion that the world has ever seen. And indeed, the religiosity of man and his religious beliefs is truly a marvel. It's difficult to understand. It's perplexing. If we were to ask the question, what do they believe about electricity in Japan? Let me assure you, you do not need to plan a trip to Japan to find out what they believe about electricity there. You do not have to send emails. I'll promise you they believe the same thing about electricity there that we believe about it here. Same thing. If you want to know what they believe about hydraulics in Slovakia, there's no need to go there. You need not even ask. I'll promise you they believe the same thing about hydraulics in that country that we believe here. And so it is with just about everything until we come to religion. And then there's no telling what they believe. And what they believe in one place will be different from this place, and what they believe in the next place will be different from what they believe in the second. And oftentimes those beliefs are held with little or nothing to substantiate them. Isn't that peculiar behavior? The religiosity of man and his lust for religious lies is truly a marvelous thing. And it seems as though that the nearer he is to the truth, the more anxious he is to depart to something else. You remember one time that the Lord rebuked the Jews, saying, "Which of these nations around you have changed their gods?" The people who used to worship Dagon are still worshiping Dagon. The people who used to worship Baal are still worshiping Baal. The people that used to worship Ashtaroth are still worshiping Ashtaroth. And they're still believing the same things and practicing the same things that they've already done. But you, the believers in the true God of heaven, are constantly changing things and even changing God himself. And we'll observe the same thing in Christianity. I'm approaching 62 years of age. Is constantly in change, is Christianity. Fashions move in, fashions move out. Ways of thinking move in, ways of thinking move out. And we're wondering if we've got the perfect God, the perfect religion, and perfect Bible. Why are all these changes needful? I marvel, he said, that ye are so soon removed from him that called you to another gospel. And I'm not preaching today to correct any problems that I perceive to be here, but I'm preaching this because we're humans too. And we are prone to the same errors that we witness throughout our race, and therefore we have to be warned. Now, he marveled not only that they had changed, but he marveled at how they had changed. They're very fascinated with the work system of the old Jewish religion. And they're wanting to intermingle that with what they believe as New Testament Christians. And that has been long practice. People want to take parts out of the old law, bring them into the church. And you'll observe this today. In fact, there's a term that I've heard a lot in the last few years is called the Hebraic movement. And you can observe it in modern churches where they're trying to imitate many of the things that the old Jews did, including bringing in holidays and such as this that the Jews of old practiced. Little do they know that what they're doing is quite in violation of what New Testament scriptures have told us. They think they're in greater conformity with the Bible. In fact, they are breaking New Testament commandments. Now, these old Galatians, they're wanting to bring in parts of the law, and they're wanting to say, in particular, that eternal salvation is contingent upon various forms of human obedience, and maybe even human ritual, such as circumcision. And so they're teaching a system where there's a little bit of grace and a whole lot of works. And so Paul will ask them, why in the world would any thinking person want to move from a system wherein how they did depended upon what they did, and leave a system wherein how well they did depended upon the mercy, the faithfulness, and the power of God? Why would you do that? Well, I tell you why you would do that, because when it comes to religion, man's crazy. And he's always been crazy. He's always been crazy. I know I've said it here many times, but it needs to be said. The longest standing monuments on this earth are things like the Great Pyramids, Stonehenge, places like that. Some of these places, they say, are thousands and thousands of years old. It took brilliant people to build them. Those people were so smart that we don't even understand what they did. But why did they build them? They built them because of their religious beliefs. What did they believe? In one word, they believed nonsense. That's what they believed. And so we see in these monuments two things being confirmed. Number one, naturally, they were geniuses. But two, spiritually, they were imbeciles. Why would you move to a system where your salvation was rooted in the power, the faithfulness, the mercy, the goodness of God, to a system where it was rooted in your own obedience? And then he tells them that, don't you know that everyone who's under the law is under a curse? Because it says in the law itself, cursed is he that continueth not and all the commandments of the law to do them. Now, that ought to be a very believable claim to us, because that's the way life works. Let's suppose that you make up your mind that you're going to live a long time. I'm going to eat right. I'm going to drink right. I'm going to sleep right. And I'm going to exercise every day. And I'm going to live to be 100 years old. Now, those would be good decisions to make. But let me tell you, none of those things are going to matter if you don't look both ways when you cross the street. You got to get it all right. You can't get one thing wrong. Let's suppose you go out and you buy a brand new automobile and you say, this car, I'm going to keep it new forever. And so you wax the car, you keep it clean, and you take care of the tires, you take care of the transmission, you take care of everything, but you forget to take care of those little rings that are around the pistons. I'll promise you that car is going to fail. because you've got to continue in all things. Or let's suppose you say, I'll take care of the rings and I'll take care of the transmission and I'll take care of everything else, but you forget to take care of the tires. I can tell you where you're headed. You're going to be broke down on the side of the interstate. Cursed is he that continueth and not in all things that are written in the book of the law to do them. And that's the way law works too. If you go out and shoot somebody, don't tell the judge that, look, there's 6 billion other people in the world that didn't shoot. That's not going to get you off. Or if you run through that stop sign down there and the law pulls you over, don't tell him, now, officer, I stopped at the last 15. Cursed is he that continueth not in all the things that are written in the book of the law to do them. And let me tell you, that's too much to take care of. There's no man in the world that can see that everything's taken care of. Only God can do that. Why, says Paul, would you leave a system wherein your hopes, your aspirations, your joy was rooted in the faithfulness and the power and the goodness of God to one wherein the outcome was decided by you? Now, let me tell you, I've been alive a long time. I've seen a lot of people in my world or in my life who once believed in that work stuff, and then they came to see salvation by grace, and they were just filled with joy in their first love. I mean, they were so excited that they were an inspiration to the rest of us who have been here all of our lives. They sort of help refuel our zeal. But never in my life have I ever seen a person who would say, I'm on cloud 9 today. I'm so happy. I'm ready to be raptured. Because I have come to the belief that I'm going to get to heaven on the basis of my works. I'm going to be saved because I've been a good boy or a good girl. I've never seen anyone in my life that had that kind of joy. And Paul asked the Galatians this. This only would I learn of you. Receive you this spirit by the works of the law or the hearing of faith and grace? When were you happy? When were you at peace? And when did you see the power of God at work among you? And when did you love and were loved the most? Under the old system or under the grace system. Now, we move a bit later into this third chapter of the book of Galatians. And since our time is limited, I want to go to verse 15. He said, brethren, I speak after the manner of men, though it be but a man's covenant. If it be confirmed, no man disannulleth or addeth thereto. By covenant, he means contract. And he says, once that contract has been signed, that men honor it, or at least honest men honor it. Now, we live in a world where I think that people avoid commitment and they try to get out of commitment more than perhaps at any time in American history. Yet still, even in our world, you better be careful before you sign a contract. You better read the print. Now he says, if this be true amongst men, and I should add that back in the ancient world, one of the worst things you could do was violate your word. You just didn't do that. If you gave your word to something, you kept it, to break it was a severe offense. And even earlier in the history of the United States, this was the mindset that people had. Now he said, if this be true amongst men, then how much more would we expect it to be true of God? Where did men get this characteristic? They got it from their maker. Their creator instilled it into them. It's a good thing. We all judge it to be a good thing to keep our word. But why is it that we do this? We do it because We were made to do it. It's a characteristic in the Creator that has been replicated in us. And when we do not abide by it, we feel bad. We regret our actions. And everything about us tells us that God is faithful to His contracts. You know why people in Japan believe the same thing about electricity that we do here in the United States? Because God's laws of electricity are absolute. He's faithful to them. People have been throwing rocks since the Garden of Eden. Every one of those rocks followed the same rules of physics. God is absolute. God is true. God is changeless. He said, though it be but a man's covenant, yet if it be confirmed, no man disannulleth or addeth thereto. Now to Abraham and to his seed were the promises made. He saith not unto seeds as of many, but as unto seed as of one. And this I say, that the law, which was 430 years after, cannot disannul that it should make the promise of none effect. Now here he's assuming that you know something about biblical history. The law was given unto Moses. Moses was a Jew. But the first of the Jews was Abraham. Abraham lived long before Moses, over 400 years before Moses. Abraham was the father of the Jewish people. And long before Moses, God told Abraham that in thee and in thy seed shall all nations of the earth be blessed. So here is a peculiar thing. This promise was a promise to one man and one nation, to the Jewish people. Yet the promise was that through your nation, the entire world is going to be blessed. Now, Paul notes, he did not say seeds as of many, but he said unto seed as of one. Of course, in the English language, seed can be a singular or it can be plural. But we're dealing here with a different language. And he notes that the promise of God was with respect to a single seed. It wasn't that the whole world was going to be blessed with the Jews generally, but that one would be born among the Jews who would be a blessing to all of the nations, all of the families of the earth. And this I say, continues Paul, that the law, which was 430 years after, cannot disannul, that it should make that promise of none effect. That when God gave the law to Moses, he was not reneging, rescinding, or modifying anything that he had said to Abraham, because God doesn't do that. Honest men don't even do that. God doesn't do that. That we have to understand the law in a different light from this. We can never interpret it as being some modification to what God told Abraham back there years ago. And you know, if you've read the Bible, of tremendous importance Abraham is to that old book. We're called the seed of Abraham. He's the father of the faithful. If Abraham was a fictitious man, the whole book is fictitious. To Abraham were the initial promises of Christ made, some of the greatest of the initial promises. Actually, there were promises of Christ going back to Eden. But the ball really gets to rolling in the Bible when we get to the life of Abraham. And you may have noticed that the Bible covers the creation and the flood and over a third of the world's history in just like 11 chapters. And when I'm reading those 11 chapters, the book of Genesis, sometimes I'm wondering, why didn't it say a little more? I'd like to know more about this. But you see, in the view of the Bible, those subjects are not as important as the subject it's trying to get to and get to fast. So quickly, we're to Abraham. And quickly we're to the promises that God made to Abraham, because as interested as you are in this planet and how it got here, one of these days it ain't going to matter. It's not going to matter anymore. But what God said to Abraham is going to matter forever. To Abraham and to his seed were the promises made. He saith not unto seeds of a many, but unto seed as of one, and to thy seed, which is Christ. And that law which he gave to Moses was no amendment to what God said to Abraham. He said, if that were so, Paul said, if that were so, then what God promised to Abraham could not have been truly a promise. But God gave it to Abraham by promise, and the clear meaning is he gave it to Abraham as an unconditional promise. He didn't say to Abraham, if you'll do this or if you'll do that. Rather, God said to Abraham, this is what I'm going to do. And thee and in thy seed shall all nations of the earth be blessed. And then God went to sign the contract. And we look at the signature he put on it. You remember how Abraham made the two rows of animal pieces? And then God passed between those animal pieces. You know that that was actually a common ritual in the ancient world when men would do contracts, but the deal was this. Both sides passed through the pieces. If me and you are making an agreement, I'll walk through, then you walk through. Abraham didn't walk through those pieces. Only God. Because God is saying, this is a deal I'm making. The terms I'm going to meet. Your salvation I'm going to provide. Now your job is to believe it and live like you believe it. And honor a God who gave it to you with how you walk, how you talk, and how you worship. Why, Paul asked the Galatians, have you been removed from that? Wherefore then serveth the law, he says in verse 19. It was added because of transgressions. I never have seen them pass a law against anything the people weren't doing. Any law they pass is because people are already violating what the law would otherwise be. They pass a law against using dope because people are using dope. If nobody in the world's using dope, they wouldn't pass a law against it. Paul said you were guilty when the law was given. And you remember that when God gave those commandments, the people, including Moses himself, shuddered for fear. It was added because of transgressions. God didn't give that law to save people because they were already damned when it got to them. And it showed them that they were damned. It was added because of transgressions till the seed should come to whom the promise had been made. And it was ordained by angels and the hand of a mediator. Now there's an important detail that may not have been manifest when you were reading about the giving of the law in the Old Testament, but subsequent scriptural writers are going to shed some light on this. That when God gave that law, he administered it through angels. There were angels up there on Sinai. There was something between man and God when all that happened. That's the point. But when God gave us grace and gave us the gospel, man looked God in the face. He didn't send that message down here through some intermediary. He sent his own son. The law and the time at which it was given was not a time of peace and fellowship with God. It was a terrible scene. And the people said, we don't want to go anywhere near the mountain where God has given that law. Moses, you go up there. You go up there for us. And the Lord said to the people, they have well spoken. They don't need to be coming up here. It was a terrible, it was a fearful time. And it was not a time of peace and tranquility between God and man. There was conflict, and soon it would become even greater when Moses would come down that mountain. The conflict between God and man was exposed because all those people were down there violating nearly every commandment that God had given Moses on the top of that mountain. But when Jesus came into the world, it was a time of grace, a time of mercy, a time of peace. He said that law was ordained in the hand of a mediator. Now I realize there's a sense in which Jesus is a mediator, but you have to understand that in the typical sense, if there's a mediator present, there is a fight going on. Something isn't right. If you were to say, I've got to see an arbitrator next week, I know you are at conflict with somebody else. If you're saying to me that me and the wife are going to go see a mediator, I know your marriage is on the rocks. The mediator that Paul is talking about was Moses. And the reason there was a mediator is because the people and God were not on good terms. And in fact, God told Moses, why don't I just destroy all of them and I'll raise up a new nation in you. And you remember Moses negotiated with God. And he said to God this. This is over in Deuteronomy about 32-33. He said, you have told me that I have found grace in your sight. God said, that's right. And then Moses said, I'm going to ask you on that basis to be merciful to this people and preserve them. And God said, it's a deal. That part of the Bible you want to study very carefully because Moses is a type of Christ there. Moses didn't say to God, I want you to cut them a break. I want you to consider that they did this well while they did that poorly. But rather, I'm going to say to you that because I have found favor in your sight, I want you to forgive them. God said, you're done. Done deal. And that's exactly why we're forgiven today. Someone found favor in the sight of God. That law was given through a mediator. The gospel was given by God himself and his son. He goes on and says, is the law against the promises of God? Is this some kind of contradiction in the Bible? He said, God forbid. If a law had been given, which could have given life, righteousness should have been by the law. If we could have gotten to heaven by our obedience, that's the way we should have gotten there and not required Jesus to die on the cross. And that's one reason Jesus prayed. If it be possible, let this cup pass from me. He wants you to know it wasn't possible. If a law could have been given, which could have given life, verily righteousness should have been by the law. But the scripture hath concluded all unto sin that the promise by faith of Jesus Christ might be given to them that believe. The purpose of that law was not to save, but to show that we were condemned. I move us all to put our faith in Jesus Christ, and clearly what the apostle just said is that no man can do that unless he sees he's a sinner. The scripture hath concluded all unto sin that the promise by faith of Jesus Christ might be given to them that believe. You're not going to get to the latter point until you've arrived at the former. You're not going to have faith in Jesus Christ till you see I'm a failed sinner. I've fallen short of what God requires. It must be met in Jesus Christ and in Jesus Christ alone. But what better terms are you ever going to find? Are the Muslims going to give you better terms than that? What about the Buddhists, Hindus, Judaism? All of those are works-based religions. And I've already told you that everything about you says that in a works-based religion, if you don't get everything right, then everything is wrong. But we got that beautiful song in our book, Jesus paid it all. He's the only one who can take care of everything. And what he says that we are, that is when the apostle says that we are to have faith in him, it means we are to look to him in just that manner. It's not part me and part Jesus. It's all Jesus. And since it is all Jesus, that's what my life should reflect. We don't perform good works in order to earn our salvation. We perform good works to honor him who gave it to us. Let's don't ever depart from that. Let's don't ever let the apostle say, I marvel at you too, that you're so soon removed from him that called us unto another gospel, which is not another, he says. He said, but this we say, if we are an angel from heaven, preach any other gospel unto you than that which you have received, let him be accursed. And as I said before, I'll say again, if we are an angel, preach any gospel other than this true gospel that says that Jesus paid it all, let him be accursed. If you believe it, you're not cursed, you're blessed. It's the most blessed thing that you have. But you're obligated to act on it, to be united with the Church of Jesus Christ, baptized in his name, taking up your cross, and following the example that he left for you. We're going to sing a few verses of a hymn wherein you have that opportunity. Again, we will forego the handshake today. The services will be at 1 p.m., so we won't leave everyone with time to get something to eat. And then we hope to see you gathered back here.